All right, so get ready, because today we're going deep on a case that had a huge impact on the legal world. Robinson v. California. This 1962 Supreme Court case really grappled with a question that, might seem pretty obvious now, but back then it was a big deal.
Okay.
Can you punish someone for just being a certain way, for who they are,
Yeah.
rather than for something they actually did?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Robinson v. California really forced everyone to look closely at what we actually consider criminal. It challenged that whole tough on crime thing by basically asking, hold on, are we really allowed to punish someone just because they're an addict?
Okay, so let's set the scene for our listeners. We're in LA, 1962, and our guy in this whole thing is Lawrence Robinson. And as luck would have it, he gets caught up in a very unique law.
Robinson's story starts with a pretty straightforward arrest. Police find needle marks on his arm, and well, they assume he's using drugs. Robinson says, no, those are from an old allergy I got back in the military. But the police aren't buying it. And here's where things get really interesting. Back then, California had a law that said just being addicted to narcotics was a crime. Didn't matter if you had any drugs on you or if you'd you recently, just the fact that you were addicted, boom, illegal.
So you could literally be arrested just for being an addict, even if like you weren't caught with drugs or using them right then.
Yep, that's right. Pretty wild, huh?
Yeah, that's crazy. It's like saying it's illegal to have a cold. Doesn't really make sense.
It was a really bizarre law. California Statute 17221, and you know what it targeted? It targeted the status of being an addict, which really raised a lot of questions about what we can actually punish people for legally.
So this case wasn't just about drugs. It was about some pretty fundamental ideas in criminal law.
Absolutely. It got even more complicated because the instructions the jury got in Robinson's trial, well, they weren't very clear.
How so?
They could convict him for using drugs or just for being addicted. A real legal mess.
And talk about a gray area. So Robinson ends up getting convicted, and this case, with all its complicated legal stuff, ends up at the Supreme Court. What was the main issue the justices had to deal with?
Well, the big question in front of the Supreme Court was this: could California actually criminalize someone for simply being an addict? Like, was that allowed under the Eighth Amendment, which bans cruel and unusual punishment?
So they had to decide if punishing someone just for being an addict was taking things too far.
Exactly. It was a landmark case, This was going to have a big impact on the legal system.
And so what did the court ultimately decide?
They sided with Robinson, 6-3.
Wow.
They said California's law was breaking the Eighth Amendment. Justice Stewart, he wrote the majority opinion, and he famously compared punishing addiction to like putting someone in jail for having a cold.
That's a pretty powerful analogy. It really makes you think about, the absurdity of punishing someone for something they might not even have control over.
It's a great comparison, and it really shifted how people thought about criminal behavior. It highlighted this crucial difference: punishing actions versus punishing someone for just existing a certain way.
Okay, so let's dig into Justice Stewart's thinking a bit. What were the main points that led him to make this, really groundbreaking decision?
Well, his opinion really rested on three big arguments. First, he focused on the difference between status and conduct. California's law was all about Robinson's condition, being an addict, not about any actual things he did, like possessing or selling drugs.
So it was more about who he was than what he did.
Precisely. Okay, second important point was the idea of involuntariness. Stewart said addiction could be, something you get innocently, just like catching a cold, really pushing that comparison.
So basically, he was saying you can't punish someone for something they might not have even chosen in the first place.
Exactly. Punishing someone for a condition that they might not have control over, well, that's just not fair.
Makes sense. What was his third point?
His third point looked at history. He talked about how society's view on punishing people for illnesses like leprosy or mental illness, they've changed over time. And he suggested that punishing addiction, well, that was like going backwards to a less enlightened time.
So he was basically saying we've moved beyond punishing people just because they're sick, and addiction, well, maybe we should see it in a similar way.
Now, Justice Stewart wasn't the only one who thought this way. Justice Harlan agreed with the majority, but he wrote his own separate opinion. And that's where he brought in another really important legal idea, actus reus.
Actus reus. That rings a bell. It's Latin for like guilty act.
Sure. You know. Bingo. Harlan was saying that to be convicted of a crime, there's got to be a voluntary act, not just a state of being.
Right.
You can't just punish someone for like wanting to use drugs.
Yeah, so you can't punish someone for their thoughts or desires. It needs to be something they actually do.
You got it. And this idea of actus reus became a cornerstone of legal arguments in a lot of later cases.
So the majority opinions in Robinson were really focused on this idea that California went after addiction itself, the condition, and not any actual actions that Robinson did related to drug use. But I bet not every justice agreed with that thinking, right?
You're right. There were some justices who disagreed with the majority,
yeah.
And they had some pretty compelling points that are worth looking at.
All right. So let's hear from those dissenting voices. What were the main arguments against the majority's decision in Robinson?
Well, one of the loudest voices against it was Justice Clark.
Mm-hmm.
He thought California's law, he saw it more as a way to help people, not just punish them, like a kind of treatment, you know?
Oh, interesting.
He thought it was a way to step in and help incipient addicts, that's what he called them, before their addiction got totally out of control.
So he saw jail time as a way to maybe prevent things from getting worse, like a wake-up call to get help.
Yeah, exactly. He was arguing that these people, they still had a choice, and being locked up could be that thing that made them realize, hey, I need to get my life back on track.
Huh. So he was coming at it from a completely different angle, seeing it as a way to intervene rather than just punish. What about Justice White? What did he think?
Justice White, he was more focused on the actual words of the law. You know, he was a textualist.
Right.
His argument was all about the statute. He said it punished habitual use, not just being addicted.
Oh, so he was making a distinction between, like, simply being addicted and actually using drugs regularly.
Yeah, exactly. And he was worried that if they struck down California's law, it would stop states from dealing with drug problems effectively. Both Clark and White, they were concerned about that. They thought it would take away a tool that states needed to keep people safe.
That's a good point. It shows how this case wasn't just about one guy and his addiction, right?
Yeah.
It raised all these bigger questions about individual rights, how much power the government has, and what role the legal system should play in dealing with these tough social issues.
Absolutely. It was a huge case with a lot of implications.
So, even though there were these dissenting opinions, Robinson v. California ended up being a really important case. What kind of lasting impact did it have on the law?
Well, Robinson actually gave us two really key legal principles that are still used today. They're called the status crime doctrine and the act requirement.
Okay, let's break those down. What do they mean, and how do they connect back to Robinson's case?
So the status crime doctrine, it basically says you can't punish someone just for being a certain way. You got to have actually done something, committed an act, you know, to be guilty of a crime. Robinson made it clear that the state can't just go after people for being an addict or being poor or homeless.
Makes sense. It goes back to that comparison Justice Stewart made with having a cold, right?
Yeah.
You can't throw someone in jail for having a cold.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be able to punish them just for being an addict either.
And this doctrine, it's been used in a lot of important cases since Robinson. Like Pottinger v. Miami in 1992, that case was about laws that targeted homeless people for things like sleeping in public. And the court, they used Robinson to say those laws were unconstitutional because they were basically punishing people for being homeless, not for doing anything harmful.
Wow. So Robinson set a precedent for protecting vulnerable people from being unfairly criminalized just because of their situation.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big deal.
It is. And the second principle, the act requirement, that came out of Robinson too. It emphasizes the idea that to have a crime, there has to be a voluntary action, an actus reus. You remember Justice Harlan argued that point really strongly.
Right, you can't punish someone just for thinking about doing something. You need an actual act to go with it.
Exactly. And this idea was made even stronger in another case, Powell v. Texas in 1968. That one was about laws against being drunk in public.
Okay, so how did Powell v. Texas build on the stuff from Robinson?
Well, in Powell, the court said those public intoxication laws were okay, but they said it was because those laws focused on the behavior of being drunk in public, not just the status of being an alcoholic.
Okay.
They said alcoholism might be a disease, but being drunk and causing a scene in public, well, that's a choice, so they could punish that.
So between Robinson and Powell, they basically drew a clearer line between who you are and what you do.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty amazing how these cases from so long ago still affect our legal system today.
They do. Robinson v. California really made us rethink some fundamental things about criminal law. But like a lot of big cases, it also left us with some questions, some gray areas that we're still figuring out.
Yeah, that's what makes this stuff so interesting, right? It's not always black and white. There are always these details and complications that keep us debating and trying to understand the law better.
Yeah.
So what are some of those unanswered questions that came out of Robinson?
Well, I'm thinking about, like, what happens when someone commits a crime to feed their addiction?
Does Robinson still apply there? Or does that kind of cross the line between, you know, status and act?
Yeah, that's something courts are dealing with all the time, even now. Like, let's say someone steals to get money for drugs.
Right.
Are they being punished for the addiction or for the actual stealing?
It's tricky.
It can be really tough to tell those two things apart.
Yeah, it shows how complicated addiction is and how it can get mixed up with criminal stuff. And with the opioid crisis, it seems like this issue is even more important now, right?
Oh, absolutely. People are understanding more and more that addiction is a disease. And that makes these legal questions even harder. Like, there's this debate going on about whether it's even constitutional to punish someone for relapsing if they're on probation.
Mm.
So someone on probation relapses and uses drugs. Are we punishing them for being an addict or for breaking the rules of their probation? It's a tough one.
Yeah, it's like a no-win situation for people who are struggling. They're trying to get better, but then they get punished for the very thing they're trying to overcome.
And that's where Robinson is still so relevant today. It makes us look at these tough questions and ask ourselves, is our legal system really helping people? Or are we punishing them for something they might not be able to control?
Yeah. It makes you think. It reminds us that the law has a real impact on people's lives. We gotta be careful about how we approach crime and punishment.
Exactly. Robinson v. California, it might have been decided way back in 62, but people are still talking about it and using it to make legal arguments today.
So we've covered the facts of the case, the different opinions from the justices, and we even talked about the bigger legal ideas that came out of Robinson. But for someone who's not a lawyer, why should they care about a case that happened over 60 years ago?
You know, I think Robinson v. California reminds us that the law, it's not just some abstract set of rules, right? It affects real people in their everyday lives. It's about fairness and making sure our system isn't punishing people just for who they are or for the challenges they face.
It's about saying, look, we're not going to punish people for things they haven't done. We're going to hold people accountable for their actions, not for who they are or who they might become.
And Justice Harlan, in his concurring opinion, he put it really well. He said, without a clear act, the law can turn into a way to punish propensity. Meaning we could start punishing people for what they might do, not for what they've actually done.
That's kind of scary to think about. Imagine living in a world where you could be punished just because someone thinks you might commit a crime.
It'd be a world ruled by fear, you know? Where freedom is always at risk. And that's why Robinson v. California is still so important. It's a warning. It reminds us we got to protect our rights and make sure the law is just and fair.
Robinson v. California wasn't just about one guy and his addiction. It was about something much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Protecting justice, making sure laws don't become a way to hurt people.
Absolutely. It's a powerful case.
Well, I think we've finally gotten to the bottom of this deep dive into Robinson v. California. We've gone through all the details, the arguments, and even the philosophical stuff.
It's been quite a journey looking at this case and its impact. It shows us that the law, it's always changing, right? As we face new challenges and try to figure out what really matters.
So as you're going about your day-to-day, think about this. Are there laws or rules right now that might be blurring the lines between punishing someone for who they are and what they've done? And what happens when we let those lines get blurry?
That's a great question to consider, because if we want a truly just society, we should focus on holding people responsible for their actions, not punishing them for who they are or who they might become.
That's a great point to end on. Until next time, stay curious about the law, everyone.